Thank you very much, Peter. This session is a report, as Peter said, of the supporting organizations and the advisory committees and the Office of the Ombudsman. We'll proceed in alphabetical order through the SOs and ACs and then end with the Office of the Ombudsman. I'd like to call on the chair of ALAC, Olivier Crepin-LeBlanc.
Thank you very much. Why is the slide ready? Okay. Right, this is the report of the ALAC on the ICANN 41st meeting here in Singapore. I'm just going to go through a few highlights of what the at-large community has been doing. We have continued and indeed ramped up our policy-making and outreach activities between the 40th meeting in Silicon Valley and the one now. And we had several successes over here in Singapore. First one is increasing the amount of and the bottom-up character of the ALAC policy input. In the 3 months leading up to Singapore, we've had extraordinary success in increasing both the number of policy inputs, input comments it offered, and also the input of those comments from the at-large edges. Those are the RALOs and the at-large structures, which really strengthens the bottom-up stakeholder, the bottom-up quality and process of the comments. During this period, we've submitted 16 policy statements, and in our report, which we will be supplying, you will have a more detailed list of those policy statements. We've also increased at-large ELSs, the input of at-large ELSs in the actual policy advice process. And this is a major focus of the ALAC and at-large improvements project. The recommendations that came out of this project will call for educational material to better explain ICANN's policy issues and the ALS, to the ALSs and the translation of these materials into more languages so as to be able to involve not only the English-speaking communities but also Spanish and French. We've also had a much increased cross-community collaboration taking place. We have had several interactions with other ACs and SOs, one being a collaboration with the GAC. We had an XCOM, Executive Committee teleconference call, which took place with the GAC chair. We also had a call with the registrars that was a follow-up on the 40th meeting that we had in San Francisco. And we spoke on that conference call about having joint educational material developed by the registrars and by the at-large. We also had support and guidance of the new SOAC, new GTLD, Joint Applicant Support Working Group. And that's, of course, the one of the primary bits of work that the GNSO and the ALAC have charted. And the group has made great progress. The ALAC, independent of the GNSO, reviewed, commented on, ratified, and submitted the, to the board both the working group's first milestone report in May 2011, the first milestone report before San Francisco, and the second one in May 2011. And the work group's recommendations in these areas were that the criteria of the people who should qualify for support was listed, but also what kind of support should be provided and also how the support process related to the procedures in the new GTLD applicant guidebook. We've had four new ALSs. Net Mission Asia and the Internet Society India Kolkata chapter joined AP RALO. The European Media Platform and the Ukrainian Internet Association joined EU RALO. And so this brought the total number of ALSs in at large to 134. Also in June, the ALAC rejected an ELS application because we don't actually allow all applications to come through. There are a certain set of criteria, and unfortunately, I'm not going to list it here, but it will be included in no report. Now, the ALAC also submitted a statement about the EG8 forum. Some of you might know that took place in France, and with the statement on the EG8 forum, we registered our strong objection to the G8 government's failure to invite representatives of internet end users and civil society to the forum, while in fact further skewing participation towards commercial interests via the forum's sponsorship requirements. And let me try and find the next slide. Three. Now I'll turn to the Singapore highlights, and I'll make this as short as I can. During the 41st meeting here, we've held 11 meetings, and I'm not going to go through the full list, but they're listed in our report. But we also had 6 cross-community meetings, and those ones I will list because I think they're particularly important. We had a joint ALAC and GAC meeting. We had a joint ALAC and GNSO commercial stakeholder group breakfast meeting, which was the first one of its kind. We had a joint ALAC and non-commercial users constituency and stakeholder group meeting late last night. We also had a joint ALAC Who is Review Team meeting and a joint ALAC Executive Committee Registrar's Lunch meeting. Finally, we also had a joint African AFRALO meeting. So that's a lot of cross-community work, and I think this is very good because it stops us from working in silos, and certainly it exchanges information between the communities. At-large members were also active in all the other meetings in Singapore and are filing reports about their interaction and what these other groups were working on. Now, we also, if I go into slightly more detail, we had a very productive meeting with the ICANN board. The role of the at-large, that the at-large has to play in the new GTLD program was confirmed again, both in resolving outstanding applicant support issues, but also in the outreach to end users. We had a productive meeting with the ICANN CEO, who we expressed the wish, to initiate some policy issues rather than just responding to policy issues. And our CEO said that this was something that, in the bottom-up process, we needed to deal with ourselves. And if I can also take the opportunity to say that we have a new futures working group that has been created, and that is actually being chaired by Jean-Jacques Subrenat, who was one of the ICANN's board members in the past. We had a very, very enthusiastic AP Railo showcase. The showcase is a moment when our ALSers are able to show what their real-life activities are all about when they're outside these walls, effectively. And in that showcase, we had presentations by 5 ALSs, Rajneesh Singh, who was AP Railo's first chair, and Dr. Ang Peng Hua, a director of Singapore Internet Research. And finally, I know that we are running out of time. We have much progress in the applicant support program, collaboration with the CSG, as I mentioned before, and the at-large improvement process, which is very soon going to be completed, and the reports will be filed with the ALAC and the process taken further. Finally, a couple of items which are not in my report. The first one is about criticism. That some members of the at-large community are just traveling around the world to have fun and are not doing any work. I hear that all the time, and in fact, we do get criticism about this. I am outraged by such comments. I think they're totally unwarranted. This is a group that works extremely hard, and in my view, I've not worked with people who have worked so hard in the rest of my business career. And I must say that without them, this just wouldn't be possible. So I just wanted to applaud them for all the work they're doing. And just before I step off stage, one thing on a lighter note. We have a new at-large member, a very young one, and that's because Heidi Ulrich, ICANN at-large staff, has given birth to young baby Sophia. And so that's our latest, newest member. Thank you very much, and thanks to all the staff for all their work.
Any comments? Any questions? Good. Olivia, I'd like to offer a comment. I've been involved with ICANN since 2002, and all parts of ICANN, all the supporting organizations, advisory committees, the staff, and also have undergone very, very substantial change and maturation. But in my sense of things is that ALAC has had one of the hardest challenges and has really gone through dramatic expansion and maturation, and very, very impressive. I have watched over time. I had the pleasure of interacting in multiple ways, and the distance that ALAC has come is really quite striking. And in a certain sense, ALAC is sort of the embodiment of the openness and inclusiveness for everybody, not tied to a particular business model or a business interest. And so I want to express a personal appreciation and respect for the work that's done. And one of the specific, but certainly not the only significant development is the transformation of the position on the board where I've been sitting. And so I've had kind of regular contact from a non-voting liaison position to a regular voting member, and recognize our colleague Sebastian Bachelet. And I think the for those of you who follow the mechanics of this very closely, Sebastian is just now completing the initial 6-month period, and that will begin a regular 3-year appointment. And I think we've got him trained up now. Now he can begin for real. And anyway,
thank you for your kind words. I think the community really will appreciate that.
Good. Anyway, thank you, and I congratulate you, your predecessors, and as you and I both know, it's not just the leadership, but it's the enormous amount of work put in by the members, and I congratulate you.
Thank you.
All right. Hard act to follow, but Louis Lee, I know you can do it. The ASO report. I'm tempted to ask which hat you're wearing, but that would never mind.
This is the one from the deli meeting. And if I don't wear it, I don't think people know who's up here. So as the chair of the ASO Address Council, I offer you a report from the ASO. So about 2 months ago, APNIC reached the point in their address allocation where they had a single /IPv4 /8 block remaining in their inventory. In the other four regions, there are currently about 4 to 6 /8 equivalents in their inventories. While it's difficult to predict the future, it would not surprise me if IPv4 is depleted in another region before the end of this year. In APNIC, so up until runout, they've been preparing and doing some education, community outreach, let everybody know this is happening so there'll be no surprises. They've changed their processing of IPv4 requests from a parallel process to a serial process. That way, as requests come in, they can be processed in the order that it was received. There'll be no gaming or trying to get ahead just because you sent your request in a little later. When they reach the last /8 on April 15th, they switched to a policy, allocation policy, where the maximum size is a /22, which is about 1,000 addresses. And with ongoing work, there are policy work to allow IP transfers within region and IP transfers between regions. And thank you for the opportunity, Rod and the ICANN board, for the ASO meeting this week over lunch. We brought you a number of topics to discuss, and we did well focusing on just three of them. We enjoyed this interaction and ask that we continue these sessions for more than just 60 minutes each time. This week, the ASOEC held a workshop that included an IANA update from Elise Garrick and an NRO update from John Curran. It was well received by the audience that attended. I thank the members of the ICANN board who managed to attend this workshop, and we sincerely hope that we can increase board participation in future workshops. And a couple of highlights. There are three global policy proposals about IPv4 transfer between IANA and the regional internet registries that have been proposed in recent years. Since my last report at the ICANN 40 meeting in San Francisco, we have given designations to the proposals to make them easier to refer to. You may recall that I reported that the first and second proposals are not likely to gain consensus. The third proposal differs from the other two in that the return of IP address space from the RIRs to the IANA is voluntary, and the IP address distribution from IANA to the RIRs are in equal block sizes. This third global policy proposal was adopted in the APNIC region on May 6, and it had gained consensus at the AFRINIC region a couple weeks ago and will soon be on last call. Since it is still under discussion in the other three regions, there is substantial time for anybody who has an opinion on the proposal to offer input. The next public policy meetings in these three regions will be in October before the next ICANN meeting in Dakar. The ASO website can provide you with news on new and active proposals, and participation is open to all individuals and organizations without restriction on membership status or residency. You may provide input via mailing lists and at the open policy meeting, and these meetings can be attended either in person or online. Around the regions, there are 50 IPv4 policy proposals in discussions. They cover topics of allocation, reclamation, and transfers. In total, there are 68. I'll touch on World IPv6 Day. On June 8th, over 400 websites, or actually 1,000 websites, joined Google, Facebook, Yahoo, Akamai, and Limelight networks in a successful global-scale trial of IPv6. By providing a coordinated 24-hour test flight, the event, which was organized by Internet Society, helped demonstrate that major websites around the world are well-positioned for the move to a global IPv6-enabled Internet, enabling its continued exponential growth. ISOC documented the participating websites through an IPv6 portal dashboard. So if you just go to their website, you'll go to the dashboard. At Equinix, we run a number of public internet exchanges, Equinix being my employer. We have enabled IPv6 internet peering for many years now, and this graph aggregates the amount of v6 traffic we're tracking across the IXs that we have in the United States. There's a big boost on this traffic on World IPv6 Day. What is interesting is that our data reflects ISOC's findings that two-thirds of the participating websites that contacted ISOC remain reachable over IPv6 after IPv6 Day. While compared to the many gigs of IPv4 traffic, the amount of v6 traffic is still very small. But depending on where you're measuring this traffic around the world, we are seeing 2 to 3 times the amount from before IPv6 Day. So there is some kind of technical analysis and next steps being prepared at the upcoming IETF in Quebec, Canada, at the end of July. And thank you very much.
Any comments? Any questions?
Hello there. My name's Chris Chaplow. Just a comment. I'd like to thank Louis for his single-handed attempt to raise the design standard of the presentations here at ICANN. We've faced many issues, and one that we shouldn't be facing is death by PowerPoint. Thank you.
And if I may, I just have one topic I forgot to include in the update, is that the ASO review is going on right now. We have had many interviews this week from parties that are, with parties that are interested or have a vested interest in the ASO organization. Ray?
Thank you. Ray Polzak, ICANN Board. Going back to a couple, you don't have to do this,
okay.
A couple slides where you talked about participation. One is participation in activities in this venue, which is the workshop that I know that the Address Council and the Regional Registries are working hard on to get this thing into a really nice package format and are also looking for different ways of working across the other portions of the ICANN community. The other portion is, and it came up in discussions in a few areas this week, is how to be included in the policy process. And I don't know if you heard what Louis said about the policy processes of the regional registries. They are open to anyone to join, regardless of residency. So if you live in Europe and you want to participate in a policy process in South America, you can do so without restriction. And you can participate on the mail list. There's nothing required, no money or checks to send in. And if you want to participate in the meetings, all of the regional registries have ways for you to really participate. So it's not just watching presentations, but they are working on other ways where you can interactively participate. So if some of these things tantalize you as far as what's going on, you saw the depth of work here, 68 active proposals going on around the globe, many of which could have some effect upon the way your web hosting business does work or whatever. Pay attention. Go to the ASO website and see what's going on. And if it's of interest to you or you think it may affect you, get involved because you can have an influence.
Thank you very much, Ray. I appreciate you pressing on that point for everyone.
Raimundo Baica. I would like to thank to Louis because he was one of the person who were interviewed for the ASO review. I am here with a team of three persons who are conducting the ASO review. I'm still around. If anybody in the room wants to speak to me, I am available. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Raimundo. If I'm correct, I believe the ASO review is due to finish before the end of this year. Yes. And I will have an update in October.
Hello, my name is Bill Manning.
Did I throw you?
The wardrobe. So the question I have for you has to do with the one bulleted item about inter-region transfer. I've heard discussions about that for at least 4 years, and it's always a single bullet point that says we're talking about it. And the next meeting, could we have a little more detail?
Of course.
As to what actually is happening other than it's a bullet point that won't die?
Well, we can easily dive into it with the 2 hours we have at the workshop, if I'm permitted to do so at the Friday morning update. I will add more information in there.
Well, at the next meeting, it would be I'll be happy to come to the workshop if you're going to talk about it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Let me just say out a comment that, first of all, that was really quite an excellent report, Louis. We are at a very important time, with the last of the allocations of the IPv4 there is, at the world at large, I think we're all quite aware that there is not a great deal of clarity and understanding about the what this transition process is going to look like or is already looking like. The final allocations of the blocks of IPv4 addresses does not, of course, mean that IPv4 networks are going to go away or that IPv4 service is going to stop. I don't know that anybody has prognosticated how long IPv4 service is going to continue or dominate, but my guess is that it has to be measured in decades. And yet, at the same time, we are going to necessarily see a rise in IPv6 service. And this is all going to play out in a somewhat complicated and multifaceted way. The World IPv6 Day was a really excellent initiative from the Internet Society. I really have to applaud them. And I think this has helped stimulate both activity and recognition and consciousness raising around the world. That's probably, there will probably have to be many, many more steps along that way. The role of the ASO in the details of the mechanics of setting policies and working through this will be very important. And equally, of course, the communications and educational outreach will be enormously important, both in the general public sense and in all of the various communities, governments and regulators and ISPs and all the other major components. So in the scheme of things, DNS has dominated much of our thinking, and I know the address community sometimes feels that they don't get as much attention. My thinking in that case has always been that they should be pleased, perhaps, that they didn't get much attention. But I think this will be fixed, and your time is here, for better or for worse. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Oh, Aubrey?
Aubrey Doria, a member of the GTLD community. And sorry I didn't get here earlier. And this is partly related to the comment that you made. One of the requirements that we are now facing in the new GTLDs is the IPv6 requirement. Part of the problem in looking at the developing world is the accessibility, availability of IPv6. Now, I know that the ASO is certainly not responsible for creating the access, as it were, but I'm wondering whether there's anything that the ASO can do to motivate people within your regions to help us. Because as we look around, it's sort of like, well, who's responsible? Okay, ISPs are responsible, you know, for access and for, you know, making sure that even if you get an IPv6 block, you can do something with it. So I'm wondering if there's any way, given that IPv6 is certainly a cause that you have been championing quite well, if there's anything that having championed it well enough to make sure that it's actually gotten into the requirements for new GTLDs, is there anything that you can do to help motivate people to actually make sure that it's there for if people actually want to do registries that are local to regions where there is no IPv6?
Thank you, Aubrey. I believe Hans Petter is looking to address that, a member of the ASO Address Council.
Hi, I'm Hans Petter Holen, also a member of the Address Council. I'm not sure if I'm going to address it the way you thought, but all regions in the NRO structure have V6 available addresses. What you're asking for is the service to get V6 access to the internet. That service is actually not even necessarily available in my country, Norway. I'm working hard on turning that around, and I would actually like to turn this as a challenge to all supporting organizations here, maybe in particular the Government Advisory Committee. Please go home to your government and make sure that the services your government offers is available on V6 to all your inhabitants. Taxpayers' money are spent on providing more and more electronic services to the taxpayers, and those services are not necessarily available over the next generation internet protocol. And as Steve said, this is going to be a long process. Maybe that's the problem. Everybody thinks that we have lots of time. They're talking 10, 15, maybe decades of years. We need to have a sort of a political movement to make sure that the most important services are available on the next generation internet protocol so that there is a demand for the services. We as a technical community can't create that demand. That we need help from the rest of the world to do. Thank you.
Go ahead, Ray.
Ray Polsak, ICANN Board. Avery, I don't know how much you are aware of the extensive outreach activities that the various regional registries have engaged in for now many years. And speaking from my own personal experience, when I was the president and CEO of ARIN, I remember being at many ICANN meetings, standing where Louis is standing, telling the community and the ICANN board, here's some things that you should be doing now to increase the awareness of IPv6. It's even more important that that be done. The registries have been going outside of their traditional community to raise the awareness. And so that people you wouldn't normally think of being tagged, if you will, with presentations at trade shows where people are trying to sell web hosting services are getting hit up by the regional registries. I would put out a call to the other members of the ICANN community to work with the ASO to see what information that you can get that you can spread throughout your community to help raise the awareness.
Thank you. But we need more than just information. But thank you.
Yep. So, Aubrey, I think you raised a very important point. And I know from thinking about things that IPv6 readiness, quote unquote, is more than a single thing. It is not just whether there's IPv6 transport. It's also whether the services are available. It's also whether the systems that you have internally are ready. And there's a lot of chicken and egg problems. Right here, right now, we're using time that we haven't really allocated. I'm actually very pleased that the response to the report is not just a simple dry, no response, and that we begin to get some dialogue. And at the same time, we don't have time to do this really well. So let me cut this off, but suggest that this sort of dialogue is exactly what's needed. That you guys are very, very experienced, and so the natural thing is organized joint GNSO, ASO interactions, and any other kinds of activities to dive right into this and breathe life into the kind of comments and questions that you're raising. So with that, let me say thank you very much. Thank you, Louis. Good report, as usual, and there will be more attention. I'm tempted to try to leverage off of the oft-used phrasing that we've had with respect to, say, DNSSEC or with respect to the GTLD launch about this is not the end, it's only the end of the beginning. But in this case, perhaps we are somewhere different. I don't know if we're at the beginning of the end of IPv4, but we're in some other state. So thank you very much.
Thanks again, Steve and Rod and everyone.
Let me also note that we are we've had now two out of the eight reports here, and we're well into our time. We're going to run over the 10 o'clock time, but I'll try to move the pace along and ask speakers to keep things brief. And with that, I welcome Leslie Cowley to report on the CCNSO activities.
Thank you, Steve. I will be as brief as I can. So the report from the CCNSO, we started our week with Tech Day with discussions on technical and operational topics of interest to CCTLD managers. We then held the CCNSO meeting, which was attended by more than 130 delegates from more than 50 CCTLDs. And we talked about a series of topics. Firstly, we talked about ICANN's draft operations plan and budget for financial year 2012, which we have extensively discussed with ICANN's acting chief financial officer and other staff and the ICANN board of directors. The main points of our discussion were the need for greater clarity, enhanced description of the specific goals of activities, and the addition of measurable objectives where they're missing. The spiralling costs in terms of the budgeted 13% overall increase compared with a budgeted 6.5% revenue increase, the increase in staff costs, the 15% increase in professional services, and the increase in average staff costs, and our concerns about the challenge of managing all of these professionals. We talked about the initial 30% increase in CCTRD-related costs, with initially no explanation or justification, but thankfully a very late reduction of $2 million as a result of input from the working group. Finally, we expressed some concerns about the long-term financial strategy. We moved on to talk about the further notice of inquiry published by the NTIA on the IANA functions contract, and in particular on the statement of work it contains. We discussed some aspects of this process with the board and had a session dedicated to the topic. At its meeting, the Council decided to initiate the process to provide a formal CCNSO response on the notice of inquiry. Next, we discussed some ideas for CCNSO improvements. We adopted a work plan and guidelines, and we documented the process for formal CCNSO statements or responses. We were delighted to have a meeting with the GAC. We've not met with the GAC for a little while, and we're pleased that our meetings have been reconvened. I hear they've been a bit busy on something else. Topics that were discussed range from the new regulatory framework on geographic new GTRDs to the process, to the progress of the framework interpretation working groups and the findings on the discussions earlier from the draft operations plan and budget. We also met with the GNSO in a new format to help to improve the sharing of information and mutual understanding both councils met. And we discussed the restructuring of the GNSO, which we're still endeavouring to understand, and the operations plan and budget. At our main CCNSO session, we received an update on the IANA function, shared news from 7 TLDs and regional organisations, had presentations from Costa Rica and Japan on incidents and disaster recovery, from the anti-phishing working group, and lots of things on DNSSEC, you'll be pleased to hear. We held an IDN session with IDN presentations, working group updates, and a discussion about the impact of IDNs on the formal CCNSO voting mechanism. I'd like to end with some thank yous. Firstly, to the ICANN CCNSO staff, who was a relatively new chair, I'm realising even more are fantastic. And to the hosts and sponsors of this meeting, and in particular, the .sg manager for their wonderful hospitality and assistance. And lastly, the CCNSO expressed deep appreciation to Peter Dengate Thrush for his service to the community as a CCNSO elected board member and his work as chair of ICANN. Peter was selected to the board by the CCNSO in 2005, and his depth of knowledge and leadership to resolve issues for the general ICANN community, and particularly the issues facing CTRD managers, has been invaluable. And we wish him every success. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. It's a pleasure to have you as chair of the CCNSO. And in general, I have a very high appreciation of the CCTLD community, which in my estimation brings diversity and ingenuity and quite a bit of energy to the technical and business processes of how you run registries. And I am always conscious that in the ICANN framework, we have a tendency to be somewhat inwardly focused on our contracts and processes and so forth. And having a less restrained and more diverse community, I think, is a rich source of expertise and ideas. So I quite treasure and enjoy the CCNSO community as a whole. So thank you very much. Anybody have any specific comments or questions? In the interest of time, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good. We now move on to the Governmental Advisory Committee. Heather Dryden.
Thank you, Steve. Following the usual practice, I will read the communique into the record. The Governmental Advisory Committee of the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers met in Singapore during June 18th to 23rd, 2011. 49 governments participated in the meeting, 47 were present, and 2 by remote participation. The GAC expresses warm thanks to the Infocom Development Authority of Singapore for hosting the meeting and ICANN for supporting the GAC meeting. Regarding new GTLDs, the GAC notes the Board's 20th of June decision to launch the new GTLD program. The GAC appreciates the potentially beneficial opportunities provided by new GTLDs. However, the GAC is concerned that several elements of its advice on important public policy issues, including issues set out in the GAC's letter to the Board on the 18th of June, which is annexed to the communique, were not followed by the Board prior to the approval of the GTLD program. The GAC acknowledges, however, that other advice was followed and that the Board has provided a draft rationale for its decision to reject GAC advice. The GAC has the expectation that the implementation of the new GTLD program will respect applicable law in order to avoid detrimental consequences to parties involved, in particular to applicants. The GAC expresses its willingness to continue to work constructively with the whole ICANN community on the new GTLD program. The GAC also notes the commitment of the Board to reply in writing to the European Commission and the U.S. government on the recent letters they have sent to ICANN related to competition issues. Regarding the GAC Board Joint Working Group, the working group within ICANN reviewed amendments to its draft report that addressed the recommendations from the Accountability and Transparency Review Team pertaining to the GAC, in particular ATRT recommendations 9 through 14. The JWG agreed to finalize the report for public comment, after which the GAC expects to collaborate with the Board to implement the recommendations included in the Joint Working Group report. The GAC also restates its strong support for the timely implementation by the Board of all the ATRT recommendations. The GAC will monitor the development of the implementation closely. Regarding advancing law enforcement objectives to mitigate DNS abuse, the GAC, together with representatives of law enforcement agencies from several GAC members, engaged with the generic name supporting organization, registrar, stakeholder group on the status of LEA efforts to advance a code of conduct or agreed best practices, and reinforced the critical importance of demonstrating concrete and effective support for LEA objectives to include a timetable of implementable actions. The GAC welcomes the registrar's offer to identify any substantive implementation issues with any unresolved LEA recommendations for further dialogue with the GAC. The GAC recalls its endorsement of LEA recommendations for due diligence and amendments to the registrar accreditation agreement in June 2010 and urges the Board to support actions necessary to implement those recommendations as a matter of urgency. We also met with the At-Large Advisory Committee. The GAC met with the ALAC on the 19th of June to further advance cooperation and particularly to discuss how the two committees could support the work of the Joint Working Group, the Joint Applicant Support Working Group. The GAC is encouraged by the reference to the ongoing work of JAS Working Group in the resolution of the ICANN Board in the launch of this new round of GTLD expansion. The GAC advises ICANN to provide the necessary resources required to evolve the JAS work towards implementation, including provision for legal, logistical, and authoring timely support of a universally accessible, needs-assessed applicant guidebook. The GAC also held an informative and valuable meeting with the SSAC, that focused on the ESSEC's recently released report on the effects of blocking of top-level domains on the security and stability of the DNS. The GAC was particularly interested in the possibility of determining and developing means to identify and measure the specific harm of blocking top-level domains and possible incremental increase in harm when multiple top-level domains are blocked on a wide scale. The GAC expressed its interest for more research and analysis into these issues. It also suggested having the ESSEC report published in languages other than English in order to raise awareness across the wider internet community. The GAC expressed its interest in further dialogue with the ESSEC. The GAC exchanged views with the country code name supporting organization on the following issues: the value of identifying shared priorities, the CCNSO's perspectives on the ICANN operating plan and budget, the framework of interpretation working group dealing with delegation and redelegation, an update on the names of countries and territory study group, an update from the CCNSO on ICANN security and stability, and the impact of new territory or geographic TLDs on CCTLDs. The GAC indicated its strong interest in participating in the framework of interpretation working group, which will hold its first face-to-face meeting on June 23rd, and looks forward to receiving a more detailed project timeline from the CCNSO regarding specific issues for the GAC's attention. The GAC also met with the WHOIS review team, who provided the GAC with a summary of the review's progress. The GAC identified and discussed concerns about privacy and proxy services, the potential benefits of WHOIS data validation, and the need for effective compliance activities, noting that legitimate users of WHOIS data are negatively affected by non-compliance. The GAC strongly supports the WHOIS review team's efforts and looks forward to continued constructive engagement as the review progresses. The GAC also met with the Security, Stability, and Resiliency review team. In acknowledging the team's mandate and scope of work, the GAC noted that the review is an opportunity to describe shortfalls in current plans, compliance, and preparedness to address potential and actual threats. The GAC supports the review team proposal to review areas within the scope of ICANN's technical mission while aiming to strike a balance to ensure that ICANN's SSR-related activities are taken seriously, and also recommending whether the criteria would need to be modified as the internet evolves. The GAC looks forward to continued engagement with the review team. The GAC also met with the Number Resource Organization, or ASO, who provided useful insights into the position of the numbering space following the final allocation of the /8 IPv4 address blocks. The GAC discussed with the NRO about IPv4 exhaustion, legacy space, competition concerns, IPv6 allocation, and actions to facilitate the transition to IPv6. The GAC noted the need to develop national initiatives to promote the technological update of the systems to ensure the communications infrastructure, public services, and applications of governments are compatible with IPv6, and to ensure that content is accessible from both IPv4 and IPv6 networks. The GAC warmly thanks all those among the ICANN community who have contributed to the dialogue with the GAC in Singapore, and the GAC will meet during the period of the 42nd meeting in Dakar, Senegal. And let me add my voice to others to thank both Peter Dengate-Thrush and Rita Rodin for their contributions to the dialogue with the GAC, particularly over recent months. So thank you from the GAC.
Comments, questions? Heather, let me thank you for excellent work and excellent report as usual. I know the GAC meets on a kind of onerous and rigorous schedule, and don't know how many people appreciate kind of how much work goes on behind the scenes. This is clearly, we've entered a period where the work of the GAC is more visible, and the engagement with the other parts of the community and with the board have increased, and I think this is enormously healthy. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good. The GNSO report is next. Stefan van Gilder.
Thanks, Steve. So, the GNSO's working week started, as usual, with weekend sessions. We had just a quick overview of those sessions. We had 9 sessions and a working lunch on the Saturday, including a meeting of the Standing Committee on Improvement Implementation. I'll speak to that in a minute. That's part of the GNSO restructure work that's going on and that's kept us very busy for a long time. We also had discussions with the board on the Saturday afternoon, and on the Sunday, although our work day was cut short, obviously, by the consultations going on with the board and the GAC, we still had 4 sessions, including one on new GTLDs, an update from Kirk Pritz's team, and updates on the PDP work team. We had, as we normally do during an ICANN meeting week, constituency and stakeholder group meetings all through Tuesday, and our public council meeting on Wednesday with a follow-up meeting yesterday. That's our wrap-up session where we take stock of our working week. And we covered throughout the week, we had open workshops, one on the UDRP work that's going on with the, within the GNSO, one on the consumer metrics work that we have undertaken, and one on best practices. So just to go over a few of the accomplishments for this Singapore meeting week, the GNSO has adopted a series of recommendations on the inter-registrar transfers. That's the IRTP Part B working group. The IRTP, if you'll remember, has 5 sections in it. So we are now looking forward to starting work on IRTP Part C, and we will go through to IRTP Part E, which is the last part of this important work. We also adopted some upgraded text on proxy voting. This is part of the GNSO Council's operating procedures, and this really finalizes a lot of the work that we've done on those procedures in the recent months and years since we started working on the GNSO improvements. We've also discussed a possible review to the UDRP, and an issue report has been produced on that issue, and there's a recommendation there that at this time no PDP be initiated on the UDRP. And we've had ongoing discussions on prioritization, which is an important issue for the GNSO. We continue to face a heavy workload, and it's important that we can manage that workload in the best possible way. And the best use of our very dedicated core of volunteers that work both at council level and at working group and drafting team level. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank those volunteers once again for the excellent work that they do in participating in the ICANN process and the GNSO's process. So, ongoing progress. We are still working, as I mentioned, on the GNSO improvements, but I'm happy to say that this work is now nearing completion. It certainly has completed as far as one of the 2 steering committees that were set up to handle this work, and that's the Policy Process Steering Committee, which has now been closed. We've had the final report on the GNSO PDP work that was submitted for council consideration. So a lot of that work has now moved forward, and we, as I mentioned earlier on, have a standing committee that we have set up to track the implementation of these improvements. That standing committee has started working and plans to meet face-to-face at each ICANN meeting, so that's very useful work going on there. And we have approved rules on proxy procedures, as I mentioned earlier on. So now the GNSO's operating procedures are more or less complete, and we can move on to other things. As far as working groups and ongoing projects go, we are still looking at post-expiration domain name recovery. We will be considering a motion soon on that topic, and that motion will probably include a number of proposals to the board for the adoption of best practices with regards to post-expiry domain name recovery. We have a drafting team on cross-community working groups, and that drafting team is looking to identify key issues with regard to community working groups and the GNSO's take on CWGs. We have several WHOIS studies underway, and there's a list up there on the slide of the studies that we are undertaking, and we are still looking at metrics for competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice. That stems from the Cartagena board resolution on the topic, and since that resolution, we've undertaken that work. Just a few words on the joint working groups that the GNSO is involved in. The JIG, the IDN working group, which brings together the CCNSO and the GNSO councils. Well, the CCNSO and the GNSO community, and both councils have approved the final report, and that report has been sent to the board. There's the IRD, the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group, which is currently drafting its final report. The Security and Stability Analysis Working Group, and the work of the DSSA is now being drafted. And the JAS that has already been spoken of in other SOSE chairs' reports today, the new GTLD applicant support working group, and that, as I'm sure everybody knows, is working. That group is working towards delivering a final report very soon, and the board's June the 20th resolution on new GTLDs requests a result in time for Dakar, so that group will continue to be very busy in the months to come. Some of the other things that we did was meet with the board and discuss issues with the AOC and cross-community working groups, and we also met with the CCNSO, very useful meeting where we discussed ideas on enhanced cooperation between the two SOs. And we look forward to continuing those discussions in the months to come. So let me just join others in thanking our local hosts, the meeting organizational team, and the meeting planners. This has been a very, very well-organized meeting. We've had excellent facilities. We've enjoyed really an excellent meeting. So I just wanted to thank the people involved in making that happen. Let me also thank once again all the volunteers that work in the GNSO's working groups and drafting teams. And of course, the GNSO would like to thank Peter Dengate Thrush for his excellent service and for helping bring to a close a very important GNSO policy development process that you may have heard of called the new GTLDs. Let me also thank and end by thanking Rita Rodin for her excellent years of service. She was elected to the board by the GNSO, and she has done an outstanding job on the board. So, Rita, thank you, and all the best for your future endeavors. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Comments?
Ray Polzak, ICANN Board. Stefan, you reported that there was activity in the WHOIS area.
Louis reported that there were, I believe, 7 policy proposals being discussed in various parts of the world, in the addressing world. I am curious, and I probably know what the answer to this question would be, so I would rather say and encourage that perhaps the GNSO Council and the ASO Address Council could maybe get together and see if there's some synergy involved in there and what influences could work back and forth. It's another step that we can go through and help the community work better together.
Thank you, Ray. That's a good point. Duly noted.
Let me just insert that the ASO is wrestling with the allocation of the last of the IPv4 addresses and some discussions about how many IPv6 addresses, but there's enough who is to go around forever to anybody. Sorry, mild humor. Elliot.
Thank you, Elliot Noss. Two cows. Stefan, you mentioned the UDRP discussions and the thinking towards PDP. On Wednesday, there was a UDRP session, and there was a lot of discussion about two things, how many of the interesting and desired changes in the UDRP could probably be much more effectively dealt with through rules changes as opposed to policy changes, and two, that there is nothing even remotely close to a mechanism for effecting rule changes. Now, subsequent to the meeting, I asked around with some relevant staff, and it was suggested that the path to looking at the rules would most effectively be achieved by having the GNSO recommend perhaps a panel of experts or interested parties to evaluate the rules, and that should come from the community. So, A, I wondered if you were aware of that, B, if you had any thoughts on it, and C, how the heck can we get that started? Thanks.
Thanks for that easy question, Elliot. As you know, there's been a lot of discussion throughout the week within the GNSO community on whether it was an opportune time to start a PDP on the UDRP. So I won't speak for the GNSO community at this stage. But as you said, there was that session on Wednesday. We spoke about it during the weekend sessions. There's still a lot of debate going on. We have an issue report which recommends not starting a PDP at this point, and we will probably have a vote sometime in the near future on whether we do or do not start a PDP.
I'm sorry, I don't think I was clear. What I said was I thought it was understood that there was not an appetite for a PDP, but that most of the valuable work could be affected through rules changes as opposed to policy changes, and that there is no mechanism existing within the ICANN community to effect rules changes for the UDRP, and that staff had suggested that the route to evaluating rules changes would best be served by having the GNSO make a recommendation to do so. So nothing to do with the PDP. I'm referring only to starting down the road for a mechanism for rules changes.
Yeah, that is taken on board, but I won't second-guess what the GNSO will do at this time, as we're still considering that issue, as you know.
So, no, I didn't know that. Has the GNSO formally started considering the issue of rules changes as opposed to a PDP for the UDRP?
So far, the GNSO is still looking at the report that's come out, the issue report that was requested.
Okay, as I thought, and so what I'm saying, again, to be crystal clear, is that I would really encourage an initiation of looking at rules changes.
I think
everybody has heard that there's not an appetite for a PDP and that we can effectively do this changes.
I'm not sure that's a uniform view, though, of the GNSO, that there's no appetite for a PDP. So I will not commit to that at this stage. But your point has been taken on board.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Good. Very complicated structure that you oversee, and lots of challenges, and you've provided us with a very, very excellent next candidate on our board. We look forward to welcoming Bill Graham shortly. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Suzanne Wolf, RSAC.
Thank you, Steve. Apparently, I require no introduction. We will keep this very quick. These tend to be brief, but I will say a little bit about current activities and our activities at this meeting. Excellent. Having the remote up here is great. First, our recent activities. We did a meeting, and RSAC doesn't normally meet at the ICANN meetings. Normally, we convene in conjunction with the IETF because that's where many of the technical activities that attract our members occur. But we are trying to broaden that base a little bit, so we met actually at the San Francisco ICANN meeting. Also did a workshop. That meeting, as many of you will recall, had some logistical challenges and a real crush of extremely important business, but we still got some good feedback on having done those activities, which was very pleasing, and we'll probably be meeting at other ICANN meetings in the future. I, as liaison, with a lot of backup from my colleagues, have put in significant time. As everyone knows, a great deal of work has gone into finalizing the new GTLD program and making sure that all aspects of it are pursued with a proper attention to the security and stability and viability of the overall technical and operational system. So a great deal of time has gone into making sure that security and stability, the root server system, was included in those considerations. And I was able to participate. Root scaling was one of the issues that the GAC put in their scorecard as being particularly important to make sure was resolved to the satisfaction of everybody. So I participated in that activity as co-facilitator for that topic, just making sure everybody's comfortable with the plans and contingencies going forward. RSAC has also undertaken, as one of the outgrowths of really a couple of years of work on root scaling and making sure that the system is properly understood and so on, preliminary identification of shared metrics that it makes sense for root server operators to be encouraged to gather and share. I won't say very much about that work just yet because we haven't been through the full process that we discussed for bringing that through the committee, but I hope to have more to say about that in the near future because we'll be discussing it when we meet next in Quebec City at the IETF in July. A few words about RSAC at ICANN 41. The thing I want to emphasize here is that even though we didn't convene a formal meeting, several members were here and we participated in a number of activities at this meeting and a great deal of outreach, a hallway conversation, being able to educate and work with folks, satisfy curiosities. We nominate a NOMCOM observer to each NOMCOM, and I know that everybody has seen how busy the NOMCOM is this time. So that's it's a good thing to be able to support. It's important to us as to the entire community. I've been acting as liaison to the board for some time now, and as, again, everyone has the opportunity to see that entails a certain amount of activity at every meeting, including committee participation and board participation. We did a session with the GAC and SAC, which I think is becoming a regular activity. Our vice chairman, Matt Larson, met with those groups. We also did a meeting with the SSR review team. We were asked to nominate a team member to that effort. We also met with them here, provided some feedback on their draft charter. We did have a very productive session in which we identified some questions of mutual interest to pursue for both the SSR team and for RSAC. We also, the members who are here, have participated in a bunch of other activities here with SSAC, with the CCNSO, the DNSSEC workshops, the DSSA effort that's just getting off the ground. So what I'd like to emphasize for this meeting in the future is that we are here and engaged with the community and very happy to play our part in moving this work forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Suzanne. Any comments? Excellent. Patrick Falstrom, SSAC.
Thank you, Steve. Oh, slides there, good. So what we have been working on since the last meeting, we regularly meet at the ICANN meetings, and we also, the ASAC members that are present at the ITF meetings also meet, and then we have one extra meeting each year, and that is our next meeting that it will come up in September. So we have a separate retreat once to make sure that we maximize the number of ASAC members that meet at least once a year. But since the previous meeting, which was at ICANN 40 in San Francisco, we have been publishing a couple of official statements from ASAC, and we also presented those at the public meeting that we had. And those documents were the ASAC 48, which is a comment from ASAC on the wording in the applicant guidebook about orphan glue. And orphan glue has to do with records that might reside in the zone file after a zone expires. So in the zone file of the DNS, you do not only have the actual delegation, you also have glue records and other kind of things. And now with DNSSEC, there are some other kind of administrative records in the parent zone. And there is a... People are discussing, and we are heavily engaging in that in ASAC, to talk about which one of those records should be removed when a zone expires and at what time. SAC 49 has to do with a description of the zone risk analysis, and it is a problem that we think is increasing when we have hosting services all over the place, and the actual registrant in many cases do not know what the zone file for their domain name actually looks like. And there are some risks there if it is the case that that zone file is going away for some reason. The hosting provider might go away, or the DNS hosting provider might go away, etc. So it might be difficult for the registrant to reconstruct the zone file. So we have some recommendations on how to take care of that. Basically, to summarize that in one line, it is try to make sure that you have a copy of your zone file. We also, Saturday, which is now, yes, it was not even a week ago, we published an advisor on DNS blocking. That was a response from a question we got from GAC at the previous ICANN meeting. One of the reports that we have been spent most time per word on, because it's only 2 pages long, but we've been working for a couple of months. That document, as you heard from the GAC report, we spent a whole hour, the whole meeting that we had together with GAC, we spent on just that report, and we have got requests from GAC to translate that into all the languages that I can normally translate the documents to when they are translated, and we have requested that translation, and we'll see whether that is accepted. It has to do with budget and other kind of things as well. But as it's only 2 pages, I really hope that will happen, because that document is well received. We also presented two of the work parties that are currently active. The source address validation, which is a potential update of SAC document number 4, which has to do with ingress filtering of IP addresses. The status of the work party is that now when we have spent some time on it, we do not really know what we are going to do. To explain that a little bit different, let me phrase it this way. To be able to move forward, we need to try to understand what kind of question we really are going to answer and who will be the reader of this document. Because everyone agrees that we actually do have an issue. We do have an issue, and there is a question in there somewhere. So at the moment, we engage in quite a lot of discussion with the community and trying to find out what ASAC can do to help. This also brings up one of the major, more bureaucratic discussions that we had this week, and that has to do with talking with the community on process issues regarding when ESSAC participate in informal discussions and when ESSAC actually do get a question and sends a formal response. We do both, and we are going to work much harder on being much more clear when we're doing one or the other. The ESSAC formal responses are all published as ESSAC documents. An information to all of you, so now that is on record as well. The second work party that we presented is the Who is Taxonomy, because ESSAC has identified that we have written numerous documents about the Who is service, the Who is protocol, and the Who is database, but we still see that the community is using, for example, the wrong taxonomy. They are mixing up the service with the protocol, etc., etc. So now we're working on writing just one document which talks about the taxonomy itself and summarizes what ESSAC already has done, and hope that the community might actually take that up, because the previous documents were obviously too hard to digest. Last slide. We also had private meetings with the WHOIS review team. And of course, one of the things we're doing, working very closely together with the WHOIS review team, is to make sure that what we are working on to produce regarding the WHOIS syntax is something that actually is useful for them. We also met with the SSR team, of course. We also had meetings with the internationalization of registration data, the DSSA, and we also, as normal, on the Wednesday had a session on half-day session on DNSSEC. New for this year was that we also had a DNS and DNSSEC beginner session on Monday, which was well appreciated. So with that, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any comments, any questions?
Just a quick comment, Patrick. You didn't mention it here because I'm bringing up some old work, as it were, but the registrant's guide to protecting domain names, ESSAC 44, I believe,
yep,
has perhaps had a new lease of life or a spotlight put on it, because the IRTPB working group found it and considered it a very good document. So I just want to underline that. I think that it should have a wider readership, and really probably should be reprinted, and maybe you want to talk to the ICANN communications team. Maybe they could consider reformatting it, republishing it, so that it does get to the wider, the registrant, the people that need to read it, and so that it doesn't look so much like an ESSAC report and looks like something that's a very user-friendly publication. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much for pointing that out, that and putting that on record, that we did, that we have already started talking about how we can use the enormous positive feedback of that document of document 44 to maybe translate that into something, as I say, that is more useful for the registrant than the little bit dry ESSAC document. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me express my personal appreciation and admiration for the speed and energy with which you've taken over the complicated mess that I've created over several years for ESSAC. Kidding aside, the productivity is just really quite astonishing, and I really have to applaud you and the team, it's heartwarming to see. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you, Steve, for, yeah, thank you. I should not interrupt when people are applauding me, right? thank you, Steve, for those words, and I must say that you think that you left a mess, but it was actually something that was very easy to continue to build on, so thank you very much. On the other hand, there is one key person that is not mentioned that actually makes all of this, which made it really easy for me, and that is actually David Olive of ICANN, which I would like to thank for all the help, specifically for the preparation of the budget and the restructuring of how we actually do our daily work. Thank you, David. And with that, thank you.
Thank you. Good. That brings us to the end of the SO and ACs, but we still have the report from the Office of the Ombudsman, Herb Way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On a procedural note, I was wondering if I could suggest for the next time to have all eight presenters make their presentations and save a question and answer period at the end, which will take the pressure off people like me who are running into the board meeting at the end and place it on those who are asking the questions to be clear, concise, and brief with their comments. Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, member of the board, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I've been working for the Office of the Ombudsman since shortly after its inception, and have had the opportunity to attend many ICANN meetings as adjunct to the Ombudsman. This is my second ICANN meeting as interim Ombudsman. Mr. Chairman, to briefly summarize the activities of the Office, which, since I assumed the role of interim Ombudsman, there have been 10 complaints received by the Office since January 2011. This compares to 33 complaints lodged in the same period last year, January to June 2010. This is a noticeable reduction, but I will mention that most of the complaints received for both years were non-jurisdictional and resolved through self-help or referral. I'm hoping the reduction this year is due to education and a better understanding by the community regarding self-help and dispute resolution as a result of information that is now available on the ICANN web pages and the Ombudsman's website. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the board and members of ICANN staff who have assisted me over the last 6 months. Your support, cooperation, and assistance have been critical to the success of the office. There have been no outreach activities since the departure of the Ombudsman in January of this year. In my role as interim Ombudsman, I have chosen to focus my attention and energy internally rather than externally. I would like to acknowledge to the ICANN board and community that there will be a delay in publishing an annual report for 2010. This, and addressing Recommendation 24 of the ATRT report, will undoubtedly be the first priorities when the position of Ombudsman is staffed in the near future. Until an Ombudsman is appointed, I plan to continue to focus my energy inward to serve this community of practice, this inspiring group of volunteers committed to the Internet and its governance. But I need your help. I need you to let me know what is right and what is wrong. I want you, the community, to know that I am interested in what you have to say. I cannot walk around the office every day like an organizational ombudsman, or sit down in the cafeteria and have lunch with you, as can the ombudsman of a university. I rely on you, the ICANN community, to initiate a dialogue with me, a simple email, so that we can discuss any issues you may have. Contact with the Office of the Ombudsman does not have to be on a complaint form. I hope to establish and maintain a communication network at a much more informal level. Ombudsman@ICANN.org is the address you can use to reach the Office of the Ombudsman. The Ombudsman's role is to listen to you, everyone in this room, and those listening and watching remotely. I am looking forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Herb, let me say on behalf of the board, thank you very much for your service during this period. Very helpful at bridging. We expect to make decisions about going forward in a more formal sense. But your service during this period has been enormously appreciated and helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody want to comment? So I think everyone has taken your comment to heart and does not want to stand between here and the break. We have run substantially behind. Let me ask that we reconvene at 10 minutes to 11, and that will put us only 20 minutes behind our advertised schedule. Thank you very much.